Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Secret Artists. I'm your host, Annie McGrath. And this week I am joined by the absolutely delightful Alison Spittle, whose chosen muse is Sheila Nagig, a figurative carving of a naked woman with an exaggerated vulva. Apparently these can be seen on buildings throughout Europe, but the highest concentration of them is in Ireland, and according to Wikipedia, one of the best examples may be found in the Round Tower at Ratu in County Kerry. So if you're there, then do check that out. It's thought the purpose of these was to keep evil spirits away and to ward off death, evil and demons. So that's good. I loved chatting to Alison all about art, about growing up as an Irish girl in England and then as an English girl in Ireland, and how she's navigated feelings of not belonging. We do have quite a light chat, but then we touch on subjects like religion and some slightly heavier things like flashing and being burgled at knife point. So if that hasn't put you off, then it's a genuinely joyful episode. So thank you for listening and enjoy the podcast. Okay, great. Where are you watching it, Alison?
In my home, I think.
Nice.
Yeah. You Classic. Have to pre-book like pubs here and stuff, it feels.
I know, it's lame. Luckily, Chloe did that. So all good. Right, I'm going to read you a little intro and
Amazing.
Then we can chat.
Cool.
Here goes. Alison Spittle is an award-winning comedian and writer who is a regular on The Guilty Feminist and has her own BBC Sounds podcast, Wheel of Misfortune, which she co-hosts with comedian and former Secret Artist guest, Fern Brady. Alison is the creator and star of TV series Nowhere Fast, which aired on RTE2 to great critical acclaim.
And nowhere else.
Alison has written on a number of topical panel shows, including Yesterday, Today and The Day Before, Have I Got News For You, and lots more. Welcome to the podcast, Alison.
Hello.
Annie, how are
Annie,
you?
Annie, I'm good. I am like freshly awake. I've just had some seeds, some nuts, some berries in my mouth.
Nice.
I feel ready to art.
That's
know?
What I've had as well.
Did you?
Yeah, sort of oats with seeds and berries.
Yeah, I'm trying
almond
that
milk.
Now.
Yeah, I'm almond trying it milk. Too. It's depressing, isn't it?
It is. I feel like I'm eating like Snow White or something like that.
Yeah, you know? It's not good stuff.
No.
It's no pan au chocolat.
No, it's no Pop-Tarts. Pan au chocolat would be... Oh, yeah,
lovely,
be
yeah. It's not sustainable, though, every day, I don't think.
Do you think, like, Pop-Tarts was inspired by pan au chocolat?
Yeah, I feel like a friend used to eat them at uni and I thought they looked really dry.
Yeah, they do. They look really dry, but as a kid, I don't know, like, it was like... You'd get it on the day that your parents were telling you they were divorcing or something like that. You know, it was like a real kind
what?
Of like...
My parents got divorced and I didn't get any Pop-Tarts.
Did you... Were you... When your parents got divorced... My parents got divorced. What were the advantages of your parents getting divorced?
Two Christmases.
Mm-hmm.
Some sort of, you know, sympathy from other people. Although yeah. actually that's probably not true because everyone's parents are divorced these days, aren't they?
Well, my parents were the first to divorce in my village.
Oh, congrats.
And like, I know. And I, the day of it, I took out like a full packet of Benson and Hedges and I was like, I'm a smoker now. Like I was before, but now I'm an open smoker.
How old were you?
I was about 15, 14.
Okay, because I think I was about 2. So if I'd got out a packet of fags, I think a lot of questions would have been asked.
But real power move. Yeah. Real power move.
So we're going to do some art today. Have you chosen something for us to draw?
Do you know what? I will, Becca. A Sheila na Gig, which is a medieval... it's a medieval sculpture found in Ireland and in Britain and in France. And there's kind of like arguments about what it is and what it represents and stuff like that. Yeah, here we go.
Wow, that is such a good idea.
So yeah, I thought, so for the people at home, they're kind of, you can find them in churches. Mm-hmm. It's just it's a woman with a very, very large vulva. Mm-hmm. And a happy face, and
very happy face.
Yeah, she's presenting her vulva to the world. They say it represents, I mean, there's two schools of thought. It either represents like fertility and the beauty of women, mm-hmm. and whores. Well, not like, you know, sex workers. I mean, like just the old term, like slut shaming. Mm. Kind of women as well. They're too, I think, like people are holding on to the fertility one, and like it doesn't matter either way, you know, it's cool.
Yeah,
but these are Sheila na Geeks.
Do you know what, Sheila... this is perfect, because a couple of weeks ago we had Poppy Hillstead on the podcast, and her muse was drawing the best, or painting the best dick we could think of, and this week we're doing a massive vulva, so I feel like it's come full circle and the jigsaw is complete.
Oh, look at that one. That looks like an ashtray. That's incredible.
So are there lots of different... There's not one specific one. There's like different... Because I'm looking on Google now, there seem to be different versions of Sheila na Geek. Sheila na Gigs?
Sheila na Gig, yeah. I think I would like... We're looking here. I can see where the... That looks good. That's a legit... that looks... Is that like a salt and pepper shaker? There's perforated...
Because there's ones on Etsy, people have done like replicas of them.
I think if we scroll up to, I think the old.
Yeah, I think we want the original, don't we?
Yeah. What about that one? Big vagina energy.
Can we get that in? Can we get that bigger? The face is sort of, looks like one of the Muppets, doesn't it?
That's kind of what I really like about it, you know? I'm not one... very repressed generally, but there's just something quite pure and kind, and just, it is just kind of like, God, look at this, look at my big vagina, look at that.
It's weirdly almost like childlike, like it doesn't look sexual at all.
No,
it's just like, this is my vulva.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, lads, look at this. It's a massive vulva.
Incredible. All right, well, I'm gonna use pencil on sort of card, I think, for this. What are you working with?
I'm thinking I got plasticine.
Oh, so my God, yes, Alison.
I'm thinking of going 3D. I ordered quite a lot of like art stuff because I felt like that's what I would be doing. I for some reason I felt like it was really going to be, I kind of like prepared for the lockdown like an apocalypse, and I was like, I need to get entertainment that doesn't involve like, you know, the television or relying on streaming sites and stuff. So I bought like quite a lot of plasticine and quite a lot of like crafty stuff and art stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just watched quite a lot of streaming stuff and didn't really, you know, didn't really.
The intentions were there.
It really was.
So I always think of you as a very sort of colourful, creative person. Do you think, like, were you an artist before lockdown, or did you just, were you like, I'm going to get into it because the world's ending?
So there's going to be a lot of crinkling because I'm going through different bits of plasticine for people.
I'm just sketching out the vulva.
I suppose, like, when I was in secondary school, I was artistic. I built a whole costume made out of cigarette packets for an anti-smoking.
Is this why you're taking up smoking post? Yeah.
Oh,
divorce?
Mate. I could do a speech in front of like 5,000 people in a big golf course in Ireland. It was like the national finals of the young Social Innovator Award.
5,000 people.
Yeah, it was crazy.
That's a huge gig.
And I was just smoking fags all before because I was so afraid of public speaking. And I was just saying, oh, fags are bad for you. And I was relying on them at that time. But I've given up cigarettes now. So
you don't have to do that before you go on stage for every gig.
Yeah. But yeah, I was into art in secondary school. I don't think I felt like I was good at it or good enough to pursue it. And then I got together with my boyfriend, and his family are quite artistic.
Mm-hmm.
Like his mum has a lovely shed full of like lovely stuff and makes stuff, and they have art around their house. And I suppose maybe definitely during lockdown, I've been more into art. I had this guy. I'm going to look up his name because I don't want to. His name's Joseph. Joseph Artman. Let's see.
Joseph Artman. Is that what you're thinking? Good luck with that.
Joseph Castellan is his name.
Mm-hmm.
And he does quite a lot of like Irish. He did a few murals encouraging people to like vote for marriage equality and stuff. And he had an exhibition on in the National Art Gallery in Ireland. And he asked me to sit on this big plinth for him. And then like he took pictures of me and put it into the art gallery.
So he got you to sit on a plinth, and then
he got his mate who had like a gold hand. And I had to like, I wonder if you type in my name, it might come up. I'm not sure. But yeah, let's give that a go. Wait there. I'll send it to you. But yeah, it was pretty cool. I mean, it was just like.
So where were you? Sorry, is this in Ireland?
In Ireland, in Dublin, in the National Gallery in Dublin.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. And also this lady called Genevieve Figgis.
Yeah, Genevieve Figgis. I was going to talk to you about this because I love her work so much.
Oh my God.
When I was just like doing a bit of research on you, I looked at your Twitter profile and I was like, that portrait, your profile picture looks so like one of her paintings. And then I Googled Genevieve Figgis, Alison Spittle, and was like, oh my God, she's actually painted you.
I could believe it.
That's so cool. I love her.
It's pretty class. It's like
and she's from Dublin as well, isn't she?
Yeah, I think she's got like I don't think I've met her before, but she tagged me in her Instagram, where she had done a like painting of a Instagram post that I had put up, where I was wearing a headdress and stuff. I just like wearing mad things.
She said, I don't know if you've read this, but there's an interview with her on the Almain Resch Gallery website.
Mm-hmm.
And she said she watched your Rape Crisis Centre gig online. And she said, I saw a comedian who cheered everyone up. I'm a woman and I support women. I thought she was the cutest lady in the world. She was all dressed up with a fan and I did a little portrait of her on paper.
Wow.
And that's so cute. The cutest lady in the world.
I'll put that on my blurb. That's amazing. That's very nice.
It's so cool. So have you got the original, or did she just send you a photo of the painting?
She sent me a photo. I don't have the original. I actually, this other lady called Hannah sent me a painting of myself, and I have that. Well, I have too many paintings of myself, and that sounds really arsy. That sounds really arsy.
Can people stop painting portraits of me? It's getting out of hand. Wow, that's wicked.
It's pretty cool.
Is there sort of, what's that in the background? Some sort of star?
Yeah, I think it's like a kind of space thing.
Yeah.
Stood up, I got like a sword made out of cornflake boxes and a laptop in my hand.
Your two favourite things.
Yes.
That's really cool.
Yeah. I'll show you paintings that I've done because I might as well bring them down while I'm here.
Yeah, please.
This is a painting of... did you ever see the film Goodfellas?
No, but I know of it. That's so cool.
That's the painting that the mum does from Goodfellas.
Amazing.
I'm going to try and make this bigger. I got like, I might just do like a multicolored.
Yeah, I love that. So have you got different, which colors of plasticine have you got?
Oh, mate. Okay. Like, I got about like 20, I think I'd say about 20 different colors.
Yeah.
I don't, like, I really like art. But sometimes I feel like very afraid to talk about it because I feel like I don't know enough about it or I'm not passionate enough about it or whatever.
It seems like you are. Also, I think everyone has that worry with art because it feels like something that's, I don't know, less accessible than other forms of art, like music. People don't feel the same sort of, I don't know, distance from it or...
I mean, like sometimes it's hard to feel like I've gone to some exhibitions now that I feel that I can go, I have a favourite exhibition or whatever. Yeah. But if I didn't like something, I couldn't tell you why I didn't like it, you know? Like, because it takes a lot of effort to make something.
Lockdown has, like, lots of people have been drawn to art. Like you say, you bought all this plasticine, everyone was, like, painting rainbows on their windows. It suddenly was like, oh, art is the thing that people actually go to in a time of need. And it doesn't have to be this sort of pretentious high-end thing. It's just a creative outlet for...
Yeah, art is a gift. It's like the things where people sent me... where Hannah sent me that picture of myself and stuff. Like, you know, that's like something that she did to kind of like help her mind stay off stuff or whatever during lockdown. And then it's like, it's just a beautiful gift to get. Art is very nice in that regard.
Yeah. So have you got any other portraits of you that you're going to whiff out?
Not here, but a few in my mum's house.
Oh, really? Who are they by?
My friend Erin, who is a comedian, Erin McGaffey. She does like really arty, lovely stuff. Like she's always like making really elaborate cakes. She's just a very crafty woman. And she what was it? Yeah, she did a painting of me at a podcast recording. And my mum has that up in her bathroom.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So when I lived in Dublin and I had like a sitcom out and stuff, and I was living in this apartment building, and one day I had a knock on the door, on my apartment door, which is so odd because you have to press a buzzer to get in, you know? So I was just like freaked out. So I answered the door and there was this woman at the door and a child. And the child gave me this framed collage of my face and like AS written across it and Alison Spittle.
Was that cute? Or was that like, how the fuck did you get into my building?
No, they were neighbours. They were neighbours. That was cute. But it became not cute when the woman behind was going like, oh, this is for you. And I'm like, oh, thank you. And then she goes, my husband made it. And I'm like, oh, cool.
Yeah, it stops being cute when you find out it's not the kid.
Yeah, absolutely. So it was, that was funny. And like, because it's like, I think, because my partner said that I just kept going to the child, did you make this? Even though I'd heard the woman say that her husband had made it. Oh, but in my head, I was like,
you're like, just say yes, please just say yes. And the kid's like, no, my dad's a pervert.
That was, but like, nice. You know, effort had been made into it. It was framed. It was very nice.
That's cute.
And yeah.
So where does that one live?
That one lives in my mum's house as well. Like everything not here is kind of like in my mum's downstairs bathroom is like a shrine. To my she even has the photo from me from the National Gallery thing, so like,
wow,
yeah, it does, it honestly is like, if you, it's like a little museum to me in my mum's downstairs bathroom.
I love that you've got so many portraits of yourself that you have to like divide them up between properties.
It's so odd. I know.
I don't think I've got a single portrait of myself.
Wait, who did it?
No, I don't have a single.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So if anyone's listening and does want to do a portrait of me, then please feel free.
It's a very nice feeling when someone does it. Like, you don't know how to, you know, react in it. Like, I've had like people do, you know, tag me in stuff that they've done on Instagram and so, especially with Fern. Since yeah. The podcast, it's so funny because Fern would like, we would be chatting and like sometimes she'd be like, I would never wear those trousers. I don't know where they got the impression that I would wear those trousers.
That's what she's focused on.
Yeah.
I love your podcast. It's great. Wheel of Misfortune.
Oh, thank you. Thanks so much. I love making it.
Are you still getting complaints?
Oh, what, from the Daily Mail?
Was it the Daily Mail? I think that was when I spoke to Fern. It was like just after some offensive thing or something people had taken offence to. I can't even remember what it would have been, but...
It's so odd because I feel like... I mean, I was very thankful for it.
Mm.
You know, it boosted our listenership, so
yeah, I bet.
But sometimes, okay, let's try. You see, I've kind of stretched out her vulva a bit too. Let's see how we're doing.
Yeah, I've gone for some quite intense cross hatching on the vulva.
Like I feel, and this might be like going on my soapbox a bit or whatever, but I feel like people talk about freedom of speech in comedy in this like a culture war abstract kind of like, this wouldn't be made nowadays type thing.
Mm.
But like it feels weird that the podcast was even kind of noteworthy to comment on.
Yeah.
You know, because we talk about like piss and shit and vomit, and
it's the kind of thing where I just assume if it was two men doing that podcast, the complaint, you'd have so much fewer complaints.
That's exactly how I feel, exactly. And I don't think, like, we're both weird ex-Catholics as well, so there's an element of like we're not fully free and on board of ourselves, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like,
you're going to have to go and repent for your sins.
Yes.
I went to a Catholic primary school. But
oh my gosh. So did you make your communion and stuff?
I actually didn't because I was such a tomboy. I didn't want to wear a dress.
Amazing.
And that's the only reason. So everyone else did it. And my mum said I could wear my cricket gear, but I thought that would be too embarrassing with all these girls with like beautiful virginal dresses and me wearing cricket whites.
You missed out on so much money that like,
oh yeah, that's true. What did you get for your communion?
I got like 70 Irish pounds.
Nice.
Which I thought I was very happy with. My cousin made his communion the same day and he made like 300 because he's got more uncles than me.
And he's a man, like, so that's the gender pay gap.
Yes, the gender pay gap. But I bought like a Barbie out of it. I was so happy.
Oh, nice.
And
did you get confirmed?
Got confirmed. And I believed in God for like a long enough time. Until I watched a film called The Magdalene Sisters, which was like this this Irish film about how Irish women were treated in the mid-century.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no idea that that was what the church was involved in, and I kind of I stopped then. Yeah. And I think maybe as well, like, I had other doubts too, but when I watched it, I was like, no, this is not.
And then you just stopped going to church.
Yeah, and I used to like be a server, do readings at mass.
Does that mean you gave out the bread and the wine?
When I was a server, you had to like ring a bell at a certain time when the priest was lifting up the communion, and at funerals and stuff, you'd be holding. Funerals were great because you'd get a bit of money. You'd get like a tip and stuff. Mourning and stuff.
Get them while they're vulnerable.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It was a whole kind of economy back in the day. I'm obsessed with religious iconography.
Mm-hmm.
There's a the Scottish National Art Gallery in Edinburgh.
I think it's called the National Gallery of Scotland or something. Yeah,
they have like an exhibition there. It's just so beautiful.
So do you try and go and see galleries and exhibitions whilst you're doing the Fringe?
Yeah, because it's not comedy. Do you know what I mean?
It's a nice respite from. Live shows and, you know, entertaining people. It's quite a nice calming thing to do in the midst of the festival.
Oh, it's a joy. I went to school in London for like a year. I was born in London and I moved to Germany and then to Ireland and back to London.
Oh, wow.
And then to Ireland again. Because my dad's a builder, so we just kind of moved where the work was, and my school brought me to the National Art Gallery in London, and there is this painting of Lady Jane Grey. She's got her blindfold on, and they told me the story about, you know, she's a young girl and she's gonna get her head chopped off because she. And really like angered the crew. Yes, that's the picture. And when I was a kid, I just stared at that for like a very, very long time, and it pulled me away. And then when I was an adult and I went back to look at that, she's just so scared. She's got a blindfold over her head. Some lad's whispering stuff into her ear.
Yeah, there's something incredibly ominous about like the way he's holding her and sort of staring into her whilst she's blindfolded.
And his clothes, they're quite opulent. And for me, that stuff was like, I was obsessed with death. I was like, but when I was an adult, I went back to that gallery. And I was like, I'm going to have a look for this and see if it's here just for the crack. And I just had the exact same reaction when I was a kid, like when I was an adult, and I just couldn't stop
staring at it.
Yeah, and I was kind of like, I couldn't breathe properly for a few seconds. It's so weird because I don't think it's like, you know, you look at it and you're like, okay, cool, that's it. But it just felt like I was 5 again and going, how do you live forever kind of thing, you know? But it was beautiful.
Who executed Lady Jane Grey? That's what I want to know.
So apparently, like, she was like a cousin of Elizabeth's. Was that her, or was it?
So she was great-granddaughter of Henry VII. Yeah. And first cousin, once removed, God, they were all fucking their cousins, weren't they? So she's related to Edward VI. Who bloody executed her, though?
I think she was like, I think her male relatives.
Oh, John Bridges?
They were pushing her as like the next royal, because technically she could be that.
Mm.
And they were like, no.
So he was a member of parliament, the guy who's executing her.
Oh.
John Bridges. Gruesome. Yeah, it's definitely one of those images that stays with you.
Yeah. Yeah. And as well, because the teachers as well couldn't properly explain like why, you know, she didn't kill anyone or anything like that. She was just, you know.
Just entertainment back then, wasn't it? Executing people.
Yeah.
Like going to see a stand-up show. So did you get a confirmation name? That's the thing that would be most appealing to me, getting a new name. It'd be quite fun.
I did. I went for Cecilia, which she's the patron saint of...
Good Catholic girl.
Yeah. Patron saint of music.
Mm.
And I think she was like patron saint. They always have like gruesome deaths and stuff. But I wanted that or Celeste, because like celestial being, and Daphne and Celeste were like a thing I liked at the time.
Mm.
But you had to write to the bishop to like ask for permission.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because my cousin wanted the confirmation name Keith. And there was no saints.
My friend wanted Lucifer, because you could just get to choose one from the Bible, I think. But yeah, he got
did he get it?
No, I think his parents sort of told him he couldn't have Lucifer. So are your family all still quite religious? Are you like the rebel, or are you all sort of lapsed Catholics?
I think they're all lapsed Catholics, to be honest with you. Like my mum, before my dad was very, very anti-religion, and when my parents got married, because my mum's Catholic and my dad is like, just like, you know, nothing, football is his religion.
Are they both Irish, or is it just your mum who's Irish?
Just my mum that's Irish. My dad is like, I say this in stand up, but like, honest, it just works for general life. My dad is that English that even I feel colonized by him. Like, he's just so, so English. And when I was a kid, I was just very into the idea of an afterlife. I kind of like was always very worried about my dad's immortal soul all the time. And like, I would keep going like, Dad, like, what do you think is going to happen to you after you die? Like, I was just kind of going like, no, shouldn't you sort this? Like, and he was like, I don't know, probably just darkness. And I'm like, oh my, that was just not what I wanted to hear.
How old were you at that point?
I'd say like about at communion age and stuff. So about like 7 or 8.
Yeah, quite young to be faced with your dad's impending doom.
Yeah, but I was honestly thinking, like, if we had a car crash or something like that and we all perished, like, that it would be like my parents had divorced, because my dad would be in hell, you know, right, which is going to be hard to visit. Well, I don't know, hell is a strong thing, maybe some form of like...
My mum was most worried about purgatory. I think that's why we got, we had our first holy, it was not first holy.
You got christened.
I had my first holy, yeah, christened, yeah. Because she worried, her great aunts had, you know, told her that we'd go to purgatory if we didn't.
Yeah. And you know that the Pope, I think, like, was it Francis? Mm. I think he got rid of the concept of purgatory. St. Patrick was the patron saint of like Ireland, but he's also, they get a few double jobs, these saints, and he was the patron saint of purgatory, so he would have it would have been his domain. He would have had to look after stuff.
My dad's called Patrick. I didn't realize that was what that meant.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Is your dad Irish too?
Yeah, he's half Irish, and my mum is full Irish. Nice. But my mum was born in Cork and went to about 8 different convents in the north of Ireland, which will sound pretty brutal.
Yeah, that doesn't sound fun, to be honest.
Which did you prefer? So you grew up partly in England and then moved to Ireland, did you say?
Yeah, I would have moved to Ireland before my communion. So about like, I moved around quite a lot.
So did you have a feeling of being a sort of outsider in both places, or was there one where you were like, oh, this is my home?
Oh, big time. Because like the village that I moved to, like, is a small village, and there's a term in Ireland called blow-ins, which is like a rural Irish kind of term for people that were like maybe born 15 miles away and have moved to the village. Like, it's a very odd situation. I'm just going to move a lot of plastic now and then talk, because I feel like I don't want to annoy people. But I suppose
they'll know
I'm actually doing stuff. Yeah. But, in my estate, so my dad is a builder, and then my dad had a car accident, and he was like off work for like a couple of, he was in a wheelchair for a couple of years, so he was off work.
No.
So he's fine now. But we moved to this estate, and for some reason there was about 3 other British English families specifically in this estate, which is like an anomaly, really. And like, we used to kind of hang out with each other and go like, oh, I like Craig David, because Craig David wasn't a big thing in Ireland, which is mad, you know.
Yeah, that is crazy.
I know. So we
what
used to
was
hang
big
out.
Was it like The Cause?
Yeah, like garage in general, I feel, didn't really, maybe some Irish people would disagree with me, but in my small Irish village, I felt like garage wasn't appreciated.
Okay.
I used to have like a CD single of Baby Cakes by this band called Three of a Kind, which I love.
Baby Cakes, you just don't know.
No.
Tune.
It's so good. I brought that like to teen discos, hoping that DJs would play it, because I just couldn't. You know, it wouldn't occur to them to do that. So we used to hang around and listen to Craig David, and like we had this crew that we called the X Crew, which consisted of us like just doing X signs with our hands in front of disposable cameras. Like, we felt we were incredible. We weren't.
No.
Yeah, so blow-in is like a term for a person not from the village, and I did always kind of feel like an outsider. And then I moved to Dublin when I was an adult, and I felt, it's so strange, because I kept thinking, oh, I'm going to move to a city and then, you know, I'll be accepted there.
Yeah.
But you're treated as a rural person there. So it's like, so I just kind of very much leaned into, and I would try and assimilate as hard as I could with like rural life. And I feel like I have, like, most of my comedy now is about, this plaster scene is like just crumbling into bits. I wonder, would I add like water to it?
Maybe. Is it feeling dry?
Oh, it's crumbling in my hands like muesli. Like, it's just not.
You don't want a crumbly vulva.
You don't. Have you ever been flashed before?
I have, yeah. I actually had a bit in my show about being flashed.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was on my way to a party at BAFTA, so I was like dressed all fancy and really excited, and yeah, it was on my road. A guy watched me leaving my house and followed me down the road, and I crossed over to get away from him, and he got his dick out of his trousers and started like spinning it around in his hand.
Like a helicopter.
Like a helicopter, yeah. It was quite traumatic.
I got flashed, and I was quite traumatized by it as well.
Yeah, I think it was that he'd seen me leave my house, so I was like, he knows where I live, and also I was wearing heels, so I couldn't run that quickly. Where was yours?
Near my house. Did you ever see him again?
No, I reported it to the police, and they actually, it was quite annoying actually, because someone else then reported a man with the same description. So they asked me to come in to the police station and then when I called them to be like, when should I come in? They basically said the police officer hadn't updated my records, so they'd just closed the case.
Wow.
So he, I guess, is still out there. But I feel like I'd recognise him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That is a disgrace.
Yeah.
I saw mine near my house. I was on my bike.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like a guy who was like, and I did stuff about it actually, stand-up wise as well.
Mm.
But he was just like going, hello, hello. And like, he wanted me to look at him. And I was like, why does this guy? And I do have something in the back of my head. And I don't know why, but I'm all the time, I'm always thinking like, you must open yourself to opportunities. Strangers can be like, eccentric millionaires who want to like become like a Dimitri or whatever.
I feel like, yeah, like this comes back to you working as a server in the church and like,
yeah.
Just think of it as an opportunity.
That's definitely it. Yeah. But like, yeah, so he was kind of waving in a really weird way, and I looked at where he was waving and it was like an exposed penis. But yeah, and I told the police, and the police were like, the police kind of came and they ran in and they were like, don't worry, he wouldn't have touched you at all. He's what's known as a voyeur. Like,
just that's so irritating.
I know.
Because it counts as sexual assault, so it should be taken, well, I hope now it will be taken a bit more seriously, but I feel like we're just basically conditioned to be grateful that nothing worse happened when you get
definitely.
Flashed.
Definitely. And it was scary for me in the way that, like, it's that type of thing of, like, I don't know, like, I've had brushes with, you know, sexual assaulters before and stuff, and you can kind of like logically put it into your head of like, oh, this happened, and I know it's ridiculous to go because of this or whatever, you know what I mean, and next time I'll be different. But with a flasher, it's kind of like, it's so random, do you know what I mean, and they set out to do it, so you're like,
yeah, do you think they do? I never know if it's like premeditated, like if he was walking down the street and was like, I'm gonna flash someone, oh, she's there, she's wearing a dress, whatever. Or whether it's like just a spontaneous thing.
My one was definitely random because it was like fishing. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's standing at the side of the road.
Right.
Like in a quiet, like dark. So it feels like that's the kind of like, you know, for you, your one does sound worse if that's the, do you know?
I don't know, it was daylight, so it was like more surprising, I guess.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know whether he like sensed
flash.
I was scared or apprehensive. Like, I knew there was something dodgy about him, but I don't know whether he decided to do it to like further that power he had over me. Or
do you think that he was like, oh, she's scared, I'll give her something to actually be scared of? Or
I don't know. I don't think I'll ever quite understand people who do that.
It's so annoying, though, that, like, you even have to think about that. You know what I mean? About someone's...
Yeah, and, I mean, this may be too heavy for the podcast, but thinking about what happened with Sarah Everard and the fact that that police officer had been reported for indecent exposure and that had just been totally not followed up with. And it's like, yeah, the flashing in itself is traumatic and scary, but it's like the worry of what else that person is capable of that is a bigger issue.
Could you imagine if he had a relative that had got done for flashing?
Mm.
Like, it wouldn't be acceptable. I'd be like,
you wouldn't invite them around for Christmas.
No, and I feel like maybe people think about flashers in a way because they're like comedic, you know, they're depicted comedically and stuff, and it's like a pathetic person would do it,
Yeah.
But it's like, it's still, and like some people have been flashing, they like, and they go like, it was fine, you know, whatever, you know.
Most women I've spoken to have all been flashed. And it is, yeah, as you say, it's like laughed off because it's like, oh, nothing. Well, nothing happened, but it's like that in itself did happen. And that's surely enough.
Like I had like, not to go too deep and stuff, but like when I got flashed, it was like just after I had walked in on people robbing my house twice. So like I moved.
Oh my God. How many ladders like, did you walk under?
I know, such bad luck. Like within I was in this house with this woman who kind of like, it was her house and she made the rules and she didn't lock the place properly, and I walked in on a man upstairs and he came down with a knife and he was like,
Alison, that's terrifying.
So terrifying, so scary. So low, you know, like just, he came in and he was like, he came down the stairs. I thought it was my landlady. And he kind of like, what is really fecked up or messed up for me is like, he assessed that I was on my own and was just like, right, I need to get more stuff out of this trip, you know? So he like mugged me, you know, in my sitting room, which was like really messed up. And then,
so as in he took stuff off your being as well as stuff in the house?
Yeah, like he held a knife up to me and he like, he went through my bag and he was asking for car keys, and I did, like, it's so weird. I've done stand up mostly about very traumatic things for me because it makes it easier to kind of like talk about it or whatever, do you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, he asked for like car keys and I didn't know how to drive, and I was like trying to explain to him, but there was like a language barrier between us, like.
So where were you? Was this in London?
No, this is in Ireland. This is in Dublin. And like the police came and like, it's mad. Like I've had like so much crime happen to me, but I've never got past the point of like the police catching someone. Do you know what I mean? Like I've never kind of like, which is mad. So I watch like, I don't watch true crime anymore because
I'm not surprised. You're living it.
Yeah, exactly.
You need some respite.
But I just can't understand like how they get people, because I'm just like, this. I didn't think I'd be talking about this while doing art. Sorry about this. But
no, yeah, I'm sorry it happened to you. Did you say you, so he, did you say he flashed you as well as mugging you? And
he was just the knife man.
Okay.
But I moved to another house, and then like within 2 weeks of moving to this house, I came home and I walked in on two guys with crowbars at the top of the stairs.
God.
So it was like a madness. Like, and but they were nice because they just wanted to get out as quick as that. You know what I mean? So like they were, but I had gone.
When you say they were nice, I mean, comparatively, they didn't hold a knife to your throat.
Exactly. But they didn't come down the stairs and went, you know.
Nice lads. Yeah.
This is a bonus round of whatever I've got in here. They were like, they wanted to get out, but I had like, because I'd been robbed, previous, I kind of like, I rolled up into a ball and I was just going like, I was just swearing at them and shit. And, but the problem was that I was rolled up into a ball in front of the front door. So they were trying to open the front door. Couldn't open the front door because I am just like, and they had to like lightly foot me to the side, like just to like, they weren't hurting me or anything like that. They just wanted to leave. So like they did that.
And were you trying to stop them from leaving because you were like, you need to get arrested, or were you just like, I'm beyond the point of knowing what to do? This is.
Yeah, I think I was like, I think I was just rolled up into a ball because I was like, I don't want you to like hurt me, or you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, Alison, but this is a lot of trauma.
Yeah, it is, isn't it, for an art podcast? I'm so sorry. But anyway, like a week later, that guy flashed me, and that was like, I think I was coping perfectly well before that, you know, like with stuff. But when he flashed me, that was like way more traumatic because I kind of felt safer outside of my house. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but then I guess the people that are flashing are probably not the most reasonable, like...
No!
Oh, hang on, what, you've been burgled? Okay, sorry, no, I'll put my penis in my trousers and go and target someone else. Sorry, I wasn't... Yeah. I didn't know.
Oh, man. But what... I was, like, so into the idea of, like, getting this guy to the police that I was giving him. Like, I did give, like, very, very detailed descriptions. Like, they were asking, like, what was he dressed like? And I was like, well, like, a member of the Backstreet Boys from the late 90s. Like, he genuinely had, like this is, what, 2012, maybe 2013 or something like that. It happened. Yeah. And he was just dressed in long pants. So I was like, this is ridiculous. I'm doing kind of, like, a flat thing with my... with my plasticine.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, kind of. It's ended up being flat because I have so much plasticine, but it's all of like different colours. There's nothing big enough. The vulva is big.
Are you like doing the body parts individually and then placing them onto each other? Or are you sculpting it as a whole? What's your process?
It's a process. I'm doing it individually. I think
It must look quite harrowing before you put it together.
And I'm talking about like the most harrowing things in my life, and then I'm like making this big vulva.
It's an intense thing to be doing first thing in the morning.
It is. I'm gonna have to kind of separate them a bit.
I hope you've got nice things planned for the rest of the day.
I do, and look, I can it doesn't, like, I'd be lying if I said it didn't affect me, but, like, I talk about this shit all the time.
Yeah.
I love kind of, like, I don't know, like, this does sound wanky, but the Wheel of Misfortune, mm-hmm. but the podcast that me and Fern do, we talk about, like, horribly, you know, traumatic stuff that you just mm-hmm. kind of, like, laugh off because... Or talk about because it's part of life and stuff.
Oh yeah, do you find there's a difference between Irish and English audiences in terms of doing performing stand-up? Or
I do. I feel that, like, I don't know, like through lockdown and stuff, I've been kind of like thinking a lot about stand-up, about the way I do stand-up. I think Irish people have a lot more tolerance for you telling a story and just going with it, because it's kind of like they're used to, like,
there's a culture of like pub anecdotes, isn't there?
Big time. Like, that's a massive part of the Irish culture is pub anecdotes. And I'd say like a significant portion of Irish stand-up comedy is kind of like pub anecdotes of stuff mm-hmm. you'd hear from people in a pub. And like with my family on the Irish side, they would have this thing where you either sing a song or you tell a story kind of thing. And there's a big culture of that. But with Britain, I feel that they are a lot more used to the concept of jokes. And mm-hmm. that sounds like I'm slagging off Irish people. I'm not. But
you mean like conventional sort of one-liner type?
Yeah, British people want you to prove jokes to them first. Or maybe London audiences more so. Ah, no. But like they want you to get up within the minute and go like, I'm funny, don't worry.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Here's the joke. That, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I kind of like, because I moved here because of, like...
You kept getting burgled.
Yeah. And I was like, London, that's the place for me.
Famously crime-free London.
So crime-free. And I moved here on that. I've never had any crime done to me here before, which I'm delighted about.
Oh, good.
I've witnessed crimes. Like, no, I'm not going to go into the trauma. I've witnessed horrible crimes in London, but never had it done to me. So
good.
I mean, I'm lucky stays that way in that respect. But with British audiences, yeah, I just become very aware of what my what language I use and how I talk is different to how British people talk. And my dad is English and my grandparents are English, and I always felt like I had an idea about Brits and stuff, you know, because I used to do summer jobs over here.
Mm-hmm.
But like it is different.
I guess it's hard when you sort of identify in a way as English, like with some of your family being English, but then you have to be aware of how you come across.
I don't sound English.
You don't sound English, yeah. In the same way that if I'm like, I'm Irish, people are like, okay, no, you're not. You're just one of those.
When I moved over here doing like a summer job of telemarketing, mm-hmm. and the amount of like, you know, you'd go on the phone and it'd be like, you petty bastard, and all this type of thing. Like, oh, and God. I'd be like, I've never, because like my grandparents lived in Britain as Irish people, and they mm-hmm. talked about like the kind of you know, the kind of treatment they'd get in the 70s and the 60s, and my dad would be very defensive of Britain and go, that's exaggerated, like, you know, that kind of thing. And then I came here and I was like, it actually isn't.
Yeah.
But I also, like, when I lived in Ireland, I used to have like an English accent for a very long time,
mm-hmm.
Over in Ireland. And, you know, I would just used to be being called the British one. And then I moved here and I'm like, oh, you're the Irish one now. And it's like, I've never been in a place that's like,
where you feel you belong.
And that's all right. Like, you know.
It's hard though. I know that from my mum's experience of being, like, she was brought up in Nigeria, but she was from Cork and then went to Northern Ireland. And she was the only Catholic in her school and like got bullied for that. And that sense of not really knowing, not feeling like you're from the place you're in is sort of constant for her. Now in England, she doesn't feel English really, but she's lived here for over 30 years.
It's like, I don't know though, like, I've written plays and I've written sitcoms like about rural Ireland, and I feel like I know, because if I didn't feel like I didn't belong, I don't think I'd be able to observe the behavior because I would just feel like I am that person, so therefore, you know, I think I was observing stuff so I could like join in and be a part of a community or whatever.
That's interesting. You're like hyper aware of the differences so you can try and sort of replicate
totally
them. Sculpture or drawing?
Sculpture today, but drawing. Actually, do you know what? Ooh, this is hard. Oh, it's quick fire. Drawing.
A real 360 there.
Yes.
Tracy Emin or Edvard Munch?
Emin. She had a great exhibition that I saw.
Spots or stripes?
Spots.
England or Ireland?
Ireland. I'm sorry. I've been there too long, Ireland.
Dawn or dusk?
Dusk.
I always have to think really hard about which one's which. But
I know.
Dusk is the late one, isn't it?
It is,
yeah,
that's the one.
Can you separate the art from the artist?
I think you can, but like, it really depends. I have lines, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yes.
What have they done and how good is the art?
Exactly. Like, there is a reason, like people, Lost Prophets, people don't go on about them that much because it was like a severe crime he did and the music wasn't that good.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, you've got to do a sort of middling crime and do some amazing art with it.
Exactly.
Church or nightclub?
Nightclub. They're both shit.
Kettle chips or tatoes?
Tatoes. kettle chips are like absolute, kettle chips are like nail bombs in your mouth. They just destroy the top of your, the roof of your mouth. Like, if you like the taste of your own blood, go for kettle chips.
Thank you. They should bring that out as a flavour. The taste of your own blood. Or salt and vinegar.
Your own mortality flavour.
What is the best Linkin Park song?
One Step Closer to the Edge.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm about to break. Anyway.
That's how it goes. And I'm about to break. Anyway.
Yeah.
Invisibility or super strength?
Super strength.
Unicorn or leprechaun?
Leprechaun. But in Ireland, like, that's not a big part of our culture. Like a banshee is a bigger part of our culture. But anyway.
Okay, banshee or leprechaun?
Banshee.
Giving or receiving presents?
Hey, you know what? Receiving. Got some great presents this year. Got a watering can.
Nice.
So good.
And a gallery of portraits.
Exactly. Exactly.
Tortured artist or rational radio DJ?
Rational radio DJ.
Soap opera?
Every time.
Or period drama?
Period drama.
Art or tech?
Art.
Art or food?
Food.
Private view or view of privates?
Ooh, private view.
And finally, dicks or vulvas?
Oh. It's dicks, but...
It's dicks.
I'm so sad. Let's have a look at your one.
I don't know how well you can see it.
That's so good. Look at the shading. Oh my gosh. That's amazing.
Do you know what I mean about it being a sort of gingerbread?
Yeah, no. That is like, look at the mouth.
Terrifying. That is.
Imagine that. Imagine if you had sleep paralysis and that's at the end of your bed.
It's very creepy. It's like E.T., isn't it?
It is like a very sexually explicit E.T. Yeah. E.T. After Dark.
Exactly.
I'll put mine together now and I'll show you.
Yeah, great. It
should be.
It's been really fun. Thank you.
Hey, no problem. Sorry for going all very dark in the
middle.
No,
I liked it. It's good to mix it up as well. That's the beauty of the art podcast, is it can be heavy and it can be light.
Right, I'm gonna put the eyes, I'm just putting it together and I'll...
My god, I'm so excited. What's the thing behind you? You've got loads of cool like things in your backdrop. There's like a circular thing with pom-poms on.
That's the... I made this. It's the Wheel of Misfortune.
Oh, that's the Wheel of Misfortune. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
I should give it a little clitoris. Good. Right.
Oh wow. That is incredible. It almost looks like a sort of insect.
It does, doesn't it?
With like huge alien eyes, a green face, sort of yellow arms and orange. Are they the legs?
Yeah.
In orange, and then a beautiful pink, blue, and sort of beige vulva.
Yeah.
With a... Is that purple, the clitoris?
It's a little grey clitoris.
It's wonderful.
Thank you.
I love it. I love it so much.
I just remember... I will take a picture of that.
Yeah, you must. Send it to me immediately. Thank you for listening, and thank you, Alison, for being so open and brilliant. Make sure you're following her on social media at Alison Spittle and listen to her and Fern Brady's excellent podcast, Wheel of Misfortune, on BBC Sounds. To see our very strange artworks from this week, then follow Secret Artists on social media at Secret Art Pod. And if you want to look up any of the artists we talked about today, they were Genevieve Figgis, Joseph Caslin, and the paintings Alison mentioned were The Execution of Lady Jane Grey by Paul de la Roche, as well as The Lactation of St. Bernard, which is worth checking out. So enjoy looking at those and see you next time. Bye. 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 Bye.
Secret Artists is a Turtle Canyon comedy production for Acast. Music by Alistair Clayton. Quickfire Round music by Steve Dunn.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.